The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yitzchak Grossman, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To download this series of shiurim, as well as hundreds of other recorded shiurim, articles, and video presentations, please visit thehalachacenter.org.
We learned Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. A while ago, a few months ago, there was a great brouhaha in the media about the decision of Rabbi Avi Weiss to ordain Sarah Horowitz as a Maharat, Manigah, Halachatit, Druchanit, Taranit. We are not going to be discussing that today. Instead, I would like to discuss another news report which did not receive nearly as much attention, but is actually, I think, a good deal more interesting from a technical halachic standpoint. I am referring to a news report in the Jerusalem Post that the Jewish Feminist Orthodox Israeli organization Kolech intends to begin training Dayanim, or Dayanot, intends to begin training women as Dayanim. Not actually sure if this press release is on their website. They are kolech.org.il, but this was reported in the Jerusalem Post. Now, at the time, someone claimed that they can't do this, Orthodoxy doesn't allow women to be Dayanim. I responded that there was probably nothing wrong with what they were doing, depending on exactly how they intend to do it. So, in this discussion, I would like to explore the basic question of women as Dayanim, what the basic halacha is. And again, I will not be discussing public policy, whether this is a good idea or a bad idea. Is this good for the Jews, bad for the Jews, hashkafically, where this is exactly. I'm going to focus mostly on the technical questions, the basic halachas that govern it, which are the foundation. If you want to discuss the hashkafa, that's fine, but you first have to know what the halacha actually says about the question. And again, I am not taking any position on whether this is a good idea or not. I simply would like to explore the halachic underpinnings of the issue. Now, the interesting thing is that nowhere in Shas Bavli is there any discussion of whether a woman can be a dayan. I tell you this not because I have such confidence in my own bekiyus in Shas Bavli. I tell you this because all the poskim, Rishonim, and Achronim who discuss the matter, no one has any real raya from Shas Bavli. They bring Ziyukim, they bring a Yerushalmi, we'll see, but nobody, there is a Yerushalmi that says Beferish that a woman cannot be a dayan in a couple of places, but there is no Shas Bavli that discusses the matter directly. The one main raya that poskim bring that she cannot be a dayan actually comes from our Gemara, Daf Lamed Daled. The Gemara says, Kol HaKasher Ladun, Kasher Lahad. This is actually a Mishnah in Nida. The Gemara brings it over here. Tnan, Kol HaKasher Ladun, Kasher Lahad, V'yesha Kasher Lahad, V'ein Kasher Ladun. Anyone who is Kasher for Din, for a dayan, can also be a witness, but there are some who are Kasher for a witness, but cannot be dayan. Now, this we do know, that a woman cannot be a witness. This is with Rishon LeBavli. So if we take the klal of the Gemara literally, of the Mishnah literally, kol ha-kasher ladun kasher la'ad, by the basic law that they teach you in formal logic, the law of the contrapositive, kol ha-kasher ladun kasher la'ad, anyone who is not kasher la'ad, such as a woman, should not be kasher ladun. And many poskim do bring a raya from this Mishnah that a woman, it may not be a dayan. Now, this is the halacha, the Shulchan Aruch does pass it like this, and many or most Rishonim do pass it like this. There are those who say it's not compelling, and they say, like many klal and shas, it's not necessarily an absolutely true klal. There could be exceptions to this klal. It can mean kol hakasher among men, not among women. So there are Rishonim who are machet. Tosis himself, in a number of places where he discusses the issue, does bring another yesh lomar, another opinion that seems to suggest that a woman would be kasher, and many Acharim do acknowledge that there is such an opinion. But lahalacha, a woman is not kshera to be a dayan, and the raya they bring is from this line of the Gemara, this line of the Mishnah. Now, the one great kasha that the Mefarshim all ask on this opinion, that if indeed a woman may not be a dayan, the one great kasha they all ask is Dvara. We know that Dvara, it says, Yishof Tes Yisrael, she functioned as a dayan. So how could she do what she did? What was her justification for being a dayan? So there are a number of different answers given by the Mefarshim, Atosis and other Mefarshim, and all of which have interesting ramifications lahalacha. The first answer, given by Tosis in various places, is that Dvara did not actually serve as a dayan. She merely taught them Torah. She taught them Dinim. Now, the Pitchei Tshuva on our Siman is Siman Zayin and Chashem Mishpat. That's where the halacha of a woman being a dayan is brought. Pitchei Tshuva brings a Berkei Yosef who says So we see at least that a woman can teach Torah. She can teach halacha even. She can pass in shaylos. The one thing she can't do is she can't actually serve as a dayan. If all she wants to do is teach, then that is fine. The Mefarshim bring another raya to this idea. They say that the chinuch, when he discusses the halacha that someone who drinks wine cannot paskin, he says that even this applies to men who can serve as dayanim, and even women, if they know the halacha and they paskin as mari hara, they have this lav too. So the chinuch clearly says that the woman is allowed to paskin shaylos if she is competent. Another malach of the Rishonim. This is the Tosfos again. They're not very clear on this. The Tosfos appears in a bunch of different places. In Shas, in Yevamos, in Nida, in Shavuos. Another mahalach of Tosfos is that Dvara was different because of Shechina. She was a Neviah. She had Shechina. So Dvara is different. Now, what exactly does that mean? What does it mean that she had Shechina? Therefore what? So, depending on the different Lashonos used by Tosfos and the Achronim, there are three different versions of this Teretz. So some of them are clear in the Rishonim, some of them are the Achronim, but there are three ways to understand what the significance of Dvarah Shechina, Dvarah's prophecy, was for a Nevuah. One Malach is that this is a Harasha, that we know that a Navi has the right to abrogate Halachas at least on a temporary basis, and like Eliyahu and Har Carmel, and this was a Harasha. She was a Nevi, so she had the right to act Shalom and Hadin. This is actually brought by the Be'er Sheva, Rabbi Eilenberg. He has a little kuntres in the back of his sefer, in the back of the Tshuvas Be'er Sheva, called Be'er Mayim Chaim. It's a very interesting little collection of admonitions to his generation, halachas, things that he felt were not being kept properly. So one of them is Kol Ish. He's very upset that women sing in public, and he admonishes them, they may not do that, and then he goes on and on, and he says no woman should sing in the presence of anyone to whom she is an erva. He says, and even Miras and Shabbos, women should not sing out loud. He says, Raks Pasehem, you know, so their lips should move, but Kolam Lo Yenishma, their voices should not be heard. So he says, women should never sing in public, women should not sing Miras. We're not going to discuss the question of some poskim might disagree with that, but at least that is the Be'er Sheva's position, women should not sing Miras in public. Now he says, he has a Kasha, and he says he was once asked this Kasha by an Isha Maskelos, a learned or intellectual woman. The woman asked him, Dvara. It says that Batashar Dvaro Barak Ben Avinoam. It says Dvara sang. So how could she sing? It was in public. It's Kedel with Barak. So he says, that's not Akasha, that was Arasha. He says she was a Neviah. She had the right to have, they had the right to abrogate Halachas. And the same thing, he says, that's what Tosfos says with regard to her being a Dayan. That also wasn't La Halacha, but that was Arasha. And this is also the Pshat of the Rashash and Nida and Afnun. He also says that what Tosfos means when he talks about Shechina, Nevuah, he means that she was capable of making a harasha. That is one shot. There's another shot that Dvara actually passed in shaylos based on her nevuah, kind of like the shaylos tshuvos min hashamayim. He would Rabbi Yaakov of Marveis. He would ask questions and he would receive answers min hashamayim. This is not entirely mefurish in Tosfos. The one sefer I found who learns this way explicitly is the sefer Chukos HaDayanim, one of the Rishonim, who seems to say this pretty clearly. Because she was a nevuah, she passed in shaylos through her nevuah. Now this is a big problem, because the rule always is that Torah Lo B'Shamayim, and Amaratzias in his Hasagas and in his Hasagas and Shas makes this point. He says, how can it be? How can anybody paskin from Nevuah, the Torah Lo B'Shamayim? This is a much discussed question in the Rishonim and Achronim. The Rav Avadi Yosef has a famous discussion of this in the context of the Sefer Tshuvos Min Hashamayim itself in his Yabiyah Omer. Apparently, we know that the Bali Tosfos felt that a woman could make a bracha on a mitzvah seisha as man grow. And the Rambam felt not. The Ashkenazi women often follow Tosfos, and our women do. And the Sephardic women generally, or often did not, based on the opinion of the Rambam and Maran the Machaber. Apparently, in some places, the women, Sephardic women, began making brachas because of the psak of the Shalos Tshuvos Min Hashamayim. He was actually one of the Bali Tosfos, and he followed the opinion of Tosfos, but he said that this is in his sefer, Min Hashamayim. So Chaim Avadia devotes pages and pages to analyzing the sugya of Torah Lo B'Shamayim, and he spends a great deal of time arguing that you cannot pass in shaylos min hashamayim. Now, this is not totally muskim. There were achronim who held that as long as you're not violating a halacha, as long as you're simply passing a halacha which is not clear, some of them differentiate between whether there's a rov and you're supposed to follow the rov, whether there's no settled opinion, but whatever it is, there are poskim who say that at least in some cases you may follow Apsach Min Hashamayim, but many, many poskim, especially in the Litvish world, tend to feel, and Chaim Avadia also in this case, feel that we do not follow Apsach of Shamayim. So the Meretz Chiyus Taka asks, how could Dvara have paskined in her capacity as a prophetess? We say Torah Lo B'Shamayim. The third mahalach, the third thing based on nevuah, as Tosha seems to say in some places, is that the Jews were makabel her authority based on the fact that she was a prophet. Now, the basic halacha that you can makabel psulim is a well-established halacha in Chashon Mishpat, that the litigants, because Chashon Mishpat is between the two parties themselves, litigants have the right to accept psulim as they ought to. And many Rishonim explicitly made the Ritva, or I think others, see, that's how some people learn Tosis. Many Rishonim explicitly make this point. The Chinuch says this beferish, that meant that you have the right, even though a woman is Psula Ladun, which is the consensus of almost all the Rishonim, nevertheless, the litigants have the right to accept her authority just as they have to accept the authority of other psul. This is again the opinion of the Maritchias, the Beis Matosis, this is the Chinuch Beferish, this is the Ritvan Shavuos Beferish, and I believe other Rishonim. Incidentally, one humorous aside here, Riachim Emden in Megillah on Yadalit. He says that the Gemara says that Dvorah sat, the Pasuk says she sat under a Tomer Dvorah, under her tree, when she did her duties as Shoftes Yisrael. So whatever Shofta means, as we just saw, there were different Shoftim. She taught, she was dying, she did Nevuah. Now, Riachim Emden in his glosses on the Gemara on Megillah Yadalit wants to know. He says, Tosa says that the reason she did this was because of Yichud. She was afraid if she went indoors and was secluded with litigants, that would be Yichud. So she sat outside under a tree, so there was no Yichud. So Rav Yachav Emden wants to know, is there really Yichud? Every Dintara has two litigants. And one of the most basic halachas in all of Hilchas Dayanim is that you may not have any ex parte communication with one litigant. A judge is absolutely, positively forbidden in holding any communication with one baldin without the other. So what was Dvara worried about? There are always at least two parties to the Dintara. And there's no yichud with more than two men. Now, somebody suggested to me that maybe there would be a dintara with one woman and one man. A Gerushin case, perhaps. And two women and one man might be a problem. But Rav Emden says a different text. He says, there's a famous halacha that when two litigants appear before a dayan, he is commanded to view both of them as rishayim. The yubayin of shneim to rishayim. And after he paskins, he should view them as tzaddikim. So Rav Yaakov Emden takes this very literally. He says, since Dvara, as a judge, was obligated to view the litigants suspiciously or cynically as Rishayim, halacha is that two men who are considered prutim or naksherim, there is yichud. So he takes this ad kedei kach, that Dvara has to view them as Rishayim, ad kedei kach, that there would be a problem of yichud, even though there were two men. Now, getting back to Kolech and their dayanim, so on the one hand, as we've explained, the consensus of almost all the poskim in the Shulchan Aruch is that women cannot be dayanim. On the other hand, we have seen a number of poskim do say, even though the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention this, but a number of Rishonim and Acharim do say that it is possible to mekabel women as dayanim. So it would seem that a melech would have no right to unilaterally appoint a woman as a dayan, but if litigants agree to appear before a woman, that would be fine. As long as both parties agreed to have the case heard by a woman, that would be fine. Now, as you mentioned, this idea of Kabbalah, of accepting someone who is not legitimate as a dayan, is a well-established principle in Dayanim, and is mentioned with regard to women specifically by various poskim in the context of women. I have not seen any real dissenting opinion who say that you cannot accept women. The only thing that I've seen is a comment by Ratzvi Hirsch Kalischer, in his Sefer Maznayim L'Mishpat. Ratzvi Hirsch Kalischer is most famous for being the one who was agitating in the 19th century to bring Karbanos. He famously corresponded with Rabbi Kneger and other Gedol of his Dor to build a Mizbech, to bring Karbanos. He was a big Talmud Chacham and a Posek, and he wrote a Sefer called Maznayim L'Mishpat on Hilchas Mishpat, on Hilchas Dayanim. Not a very common Sefer, my library didn't have it, but it is available on Hebrew Books, as so many things are, thanks to the wonderful, wonderful efforts of the Hebrew Books people. And anyway, so in his Sefer on Siman Zayin and Sifkat and Vav, he discusses the question of whether Kabbalah works for a woman, and he says that it would depend. He says, according to some Shittas and Tosas seem to say it would work. According to the other Shittas, he says, we don't have a right to that, maybe it would not work. He says, and even though you can makabel goyim and hadyotas who are not capable of being down in bechlal, they're not Jewish, they don't know anything. He says, they work only as pashranim, as a person has the right to have any kind of pshara, to have an intelligent businessman make a pshara between him. He can ask anybody. He says, when goyim or hadyotas do it, that's what they're doing. And women, of course, he's not being madama women to goyim, but his point is, since according to some Shittas in the Rishonim, he wants to learn that women are categorically excluded, and even if you makabel them, all they can be is pashranim. Ashenkin. Other sheet doesn't tell us this, even he concedes the degree that you can be Makabel women. And the nature of this Kabbalah is also interesting. The very first Tumim in the Siman, he's not talking about women, but he discusses several modes of Kabbalah. Plastic Kabbalah is done by the litigants themselves. He also talks about another kind of Kabbalah, which is essentially what we would call representative democracy Kabbalah. If the people select leaders, in the old times it would have been Zion to Beher, today it could be Congress or Parliament or the Knesset. If the people have representatives, those representatives are then empowered to Kabbal Dayanim much as the people themselves were. So he wants to say, for example, when Shmaya and Naphtalion, who were Gerim, or according to some opinions were actual Gerim, sat on the Sanhedrin, so he brings earlier authority who says, even though they were Gerim are normally not kosher, the people were Mekabel them, and then the Tumim asks, you know, Sanhedrin asks, what do you mean the people? They took a vote of the entire Klal Yisrael before modern technology, before the internet. So he says, no, what it means is that the leaders of Klal Yisrael were Mekabel them, and that becomes a Kabbalah. Then he has a kasha. He says, but how can they be down nefashis? The person has no right. He says, Kabbalah works by mamonas as a form of mechila, but nefashis, he says, how can you be Mekabel them for nefashis? So he invents a third modality of Kabbalah, and that is the Melech. And he brings Rayas that the Melech has authority beyond mere personal Kabbalah. So there are three Kabbalahs. There's personal Kabbalah, there's the people's representatives, and then there's Melech. Now there's a lot of discussion in contemporary poskim among the Zionists in Israel whether our government has the powers of Melech or is merely a representative like Tubaher. We're not going to be able to get into that question. But it's worth noting that when you come to women again, there are three possibilities. You can say there's a Kabbalah litigants themselves can choose to Makabel her. Like anytime we have a private basis and litigants go to them, they sign Shtari Bererin and arbitration agreements, they accept the authority that they are in. Then we have the people's representatives Kabbalah, which the Knesset would probably qualify unless you believe that because they're Rishon, they don't count, but Pashtus, the Knesset, is representatives of Klal Yisrael. And the third Svara would be Melech. If the government has it in Melech, then they have even greater powers according to the Tumim. One last point I want to discuss on the topic of women and Dayanim. There's a very interesting history about almost 100 years ago, the early 20th century. This is when various Western countries were introducing female suffrage, women voting. This was a great controversy in Israel. Back under the British Mandate days, are women allowed to vote? Can they stand for office? Can they vote? And this was a great machlokas among the Gedolei Israel. Nowadays, the government says they do vote. I'm not sure what the contemporary post can say, but this was a great battle back then. Rav Kook, my father always reminds me, some people think of him as being some kind of progressive person. Rav Kook was one of the famous vehement opponents to women voting. Mishpatei Uziel, Rabbi Tzion Meir Chai Uziel, the great Sephardic rabbi, was actually in favor. This was a great machlokas back then, whether women can vote. So there's a fascinating tshuva by Rabbi Pryl, Rabbi Elazar Meir Pryl. Rabbi Pryl was a great American Talmud Chacham, the rabbi of Elizabeth. He was the father-in-law of the great Rav Pinchas Teitz. Rav Teitz actually inherited the Elizabeth rabbinate from Rabbi Pryl. Rabbi Pryl was the first famous rabbi in Elizabeth, the first one I know of anyway. Dr. Rivka Blau has some very charming, fascinating description of him at the beginning of her biography of her father. Learn Torah, live Torah, love Torah. The first few chapters are devoted to the Pryl family. The beginning is devoted to the Pryl family. Anyway, he was a fascinating Talmud Chacham in America back then. And he corresponded with many, many of the Gedolim in Litha. He was a Lithuanian. So he has a siman. This is Siman Nunhei in his tshuvas. The tshuvas are called Sefer Amar, also available in Hebrew books. So he has a tshuva discussing female suffrage. Can women vote? Can they stand for office? And he says that, in his opinion at least, the consensus to Gedolim was that they could not. And he says, I'm just going to offer an explanation why. He says, now that they've passed cannot, I want to propose an interesting reason why. And he makes a very interesting argument. There is a Mardechai, which is brought by the Shulchan Aruch, I believe, in Chasam Mishpat and Siman Kuf Samach Gimel. The Mardechai says that when a community, a chatzer, or a city, when a community has a decision to make, should we build a wall, should we install something, a communal construction project, should we do something, Chazal gave us certain guidelines, and when they didn't, the community has to vote to decide whether something is necessary. And the Mardechai says that people vote, but he adds a condition, uvelvad she'agidu datam l'shem shamayim. They must give their opinion l'shem shamayim. Now, it's not entirely clear what he means by l'shem shamayim. Let's say, for example, the city is considering building a wall. So that's obviously great for the stonemasonry business. Let's say I happen to be a stonemason. Am I actually obligated to put that aside and vote purely on civic grounds, whether it's good for the city or not? In America, obviously, the assumption is congressmen are not allowed to vote for their own personal benefit, but individual citizens certainly are. So I don't know if the Marachai means that you cannot vote your own personal interest at all, or some other level of L'shem Shemayim, but the reason the Marachai gives for this, that you have to vote L'shem Shemayim, is because he says all the electors, all the voters, they are all like Dayanim, and they have to vote L'shem Shemayim. Now the Chassam Sefer, this is brought by the Pesachei Tshuva in Siman Ches, the Chassam Mishpat, Chassam Sefer had a case in his time. There was a voting scandal, a great scandal. There was an election for rabbi. The city was voting to appoint a new rabbi. And while they were having a series of votes on various candidates, a great scandal broke that there were accusations of bribery. They weren't substantiated. There were letters, there were rumors that maybe not the rabbi himself, maybe he was the rabbi himself, maybe it didn't happen at all, but the rumors were that the rabbi or people close to him, friends and partisans of his, had paid off some of the electors to vote the way they wanted. The question came, is this a reason for invalidating the vote? So Chaim Sofer says, if this is true, that the electors were tampered with, then the vote is void. Why? So he brings this Mardechai. He says, the Mardechai says, you have to be magid datam l'shem shemayim, because they like Dayanim. So he says, any voter who sold his vote in exchange for cash is clearly not being magid datam l'shem shemayim. I said before, I wasn't sure what level of l'shem shemayim is required, but clearly selling your vote for money is not allowed. So back to Rabbi Prial. So Rabbi Prial says, we have a Mardechai, we have a Chassam Sofer, who say that electors are treated like Dayanim, and they must vote l'shem shemayim. So he says, a woman can't be a Dayan. So a male, a woman cannot vote. QED. That's his argument. Now again, we get into all the questions of Kabbalah, what if the community wants to accept women, so he discusses that. But that's his argument, that a woman is bound, by that electors actually have the Dayanim. Now, if you really take this seriously, there are all kinds of consequences. It would seem to follow that anyone who's not from doesn't get to vote. Certainly, if a person is not from, he can't be a Dayan. So if you really accept the halacha, they would have had to set up a system where not religious people, Mechal HaShabbos, can't vote. So, you know, again, we're almost done. We're not going to get into all the ramifications of this chat, but if you want to see his analysis, it's in the Sefer Amar, Tshuva Samar, Simen Nun Hei. And we should just note that one of the great pro-female suffrage rabbanim of the time was the famous character of Chaim Hirschenson, the author of Malki Bakodesh. He has a lengthy discussion on the subject of women voting, arguing in favor. And we're not going to get into his argument, but if you want to see them, they're in Malki Bakodesh, his Sefer Malki Bakodesh, Chelik Beis, page 187 and thereabouts. He was a great advocate for women voting. And but Rabbi Prial argues that women cannot vote based on this Chaim Sofer. One last point about voting is the question of a woman in Dayanim is, can a woman be a Dayan, can a woman be a judge in the secular courts? So this, actually, there is a Gemara that says a woman cannot be a judge, and the Rambam says so explicitly in Hilchos Shoftim that a woman, in Hilchos Malachim, that a woman cannot be a judge for a guy. Rav Menashe Klein in his Mishnah Halachos actually brings this in many places, that a woman is not really eligible to be a judge according to the Rambam. Now again, he doesn't really deal, though, with the parallel of Kabbalah, that obviously individual litigants are not normally mekabel their judges, but the government appoints them. So you have to consider carefully the question of whether the government's agreeing to allow women to serve, and especially a representative government like in the United States, which they are the representatives of the people, for better or for worse. The question is, would that be acceptable as Kabbalah? But these are the basic halachas of women being Dayanim, with or without Kabbalah, for Jews and for Goyim. As we said at the beginning, it's all based on this one line of the Mishnah, mostly based on the one line of the Mishnah of Kol HaKasher Ladun, Kasher L'Had.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.